The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 400, recorded on September 21st, 2015.
To the 400th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 233rd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am Scott Durf.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry, along with colorful commentary.
400 episodes. And who'd have thunk I first joined the podcast at episode 200. So that means after this, I'll have been on this podcast longer than the original creators. I'll be the Michael J. Nelson of TD Gaming Podcast.
It's bittersweet with this being Paul's last regular episode as a regular host.
It is. It is my last episode as a regular host.
I think he joined the VGRT episode 93, I want to say.
No, it was earlier. It was somewhere in the late 70s.
Right, and when disco was king, and
exactly, that's why I remember.
That's why old pictures of Paul from the podcast have him wearing bell bottoms.
Exactly,
and a Dorothy Hamill cut. Okay, so the reason why I said that is because in the 70s, I had a Dorothy Hamill cut. I had bangs. I looked like a little girl. Yeah, with glasses, with thick glasses. So, yeah, there's my story for being in the 70s.
I wasn't born yet.
Yes, I know. So, anyway, this is the 400th episode, and like I said, Paul's leaving, sort of, kind of. He's not going to be a permanent host anymore.
I prefer to think of it as a transition to special guest star status.
Yeah, basically. So it's going to be like, hey, Paul, you want to do the podcast? Hell no. Okay, see you next week.
I mean, pretty much.
Damn.
But we still do have to do that Doctor Who thingy with Scott and Paul, so at least you'll have him for that. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, 400. We actually had someone writing in about Paul.
And yeah, he said, listen to my feedback.
Only the one person?
Well, I mean, Max Donovan didn't write, and neither did Scotty D. Neither did any of the earlier people. Maybe they'll write in after 400 to say goodbye to Paul, you know, sort of like after he's left.
Well, yeah, except I'm not going to read it.
You don't download the podcast and listen to it? Okay, I'll answer for you.
Well, no,
no.
I'm not on it.
Well, I could. Well, here's the thing, Paul. You could always go to the site and see the emails. You don't have to hear them. You can see them.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, so I'll tell you what. I'll be your Paul. I'll be the Paul minder. If Paul is mentioned in the emails, in the reader feedback, I'll just email him and let him know that someone's talking about him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going away forever.
No.
I'm just juggling around my time commitments.
Anyway, it's the 400th episode, and this is Paul's last regular appearance as a guest host. And he's been around for a long time. I mean, we do have long-time listeners. I mean, there are some people who have been listening to VGRT since episode one. So, you know, I don't know what...
And yet the outpouring of affection has been overwhelming.
Yeah. We didn't get letters, but we got vibes, and they're all positive vibes. People sent their mental good wishes to Paul. Paul, did you hear mental good wishes while you were sleeping? You heard voices saying, "We enjoyed your stint on the podcast, Paul."
I have been having trouble sleeping at night. I wonder if that's why. If the vibes have just been coming in too strong.
Yeah. Cool. So, what vibes have you been playing, Paul?
What games have I been playing? Heroes of Might and Magic 4 has been continually challenging.
Challenging as in it's difficult, or challenging as in you're having difficulty with the game itself?
Challenging in the scenario designer needed some better feedback.
Because the reason why I'm asking is that Heroes 4 is not your favorite of the series. So.
No, it's not. Heroes 3 is widely acclaimed to be the best.
And you can't play it.
No. Well, somebody lent me a machine, but...
Oh, okay.
Well, I haven't had time to open it yet for my various projects, my very secret projects.
Ooh.
Secret projects.
Ooh, working for the government, working on various mind control... Oh, no, I've been going...
Who said I was working for the CIA? That's a dirty, filthy lie.
I've been on a spooky story kick lately. Just reading about some of the real-life spooky things and the fake spooky things and some really spooky clown stuff, too. I found a clown commercial that was promoting... Sugar Crinkles by Post. Now, for those who don't know that cereal, it's actually basically sugared Rice Krispies, but they eventually became stuff like Fruity Pebbles and Cocoa Puffs, right? So, but they had, at some point, they hired a clown, and if you ever watch this commercial, all you have to do is say, creepy clown cereal commercial, you'll either laugh or hide under your bed. It's that creepy.
Oh my god! Have you ever seen the Have you ever seen the clown prank videos on YouTube?
No.
Someone's just like imagine like someone like a normal person, you know, otherwise known as the Mark, just walking through like a regular parking garage at night, walking to their car, and like they hear creepy music and they turn around and there's a freaking lunatic dressed as a clown.
You know. Paul?
A murderous clown with a giant hammer smashes a water balloon filled with red paint at the top of a dummy on the floor. It looks like he just broke somebody's head in. And then chases after them for YouTube comedy gold.
But here's the scary part is that last year, around September, there were mysterious clowns walking around. Sometimes holding guns and knives. Yeah, and there was no explanation for them, nothing. They just thought, I don't know if it was a mass, what's the word, when you have a meet, when you have a meetup, a flash mob around the...
If anything, I think it might have been more of a spontaneous,
creepy clown eruption, I mean...
Right, like a spontaneous... Not demonstration, because that's the wrong word. But like Kilroy in Vietnam.
Yeah, but see these people were harassing some people, you know, and looking in their windows, and no one knows why it happened or who these people are. That's the part for me is the creepiest part is no one knows who they are. It's not like anybody, you know, took off their mask and said, "Hey, it was us." You know, happy Halloween. Yeah, it wasn't like that. It was just.
Well, why should it be like that?
I don't know. Maybe they were making their own real life.
Everybody behaves a little bit more when there's rampaging psychos in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Maybe it was basically one huge meta attempt to make a creepypasta or something.
Now you're making me think of the stupid Purge prank.
Is something based on the Purge?
Yeah. Some people handed out flyers that there was going to be a Purge in Detroit and then a Purge in... whatever city.
Yeah.
And
if you believe that, you might as well be given a Darwin Award right now. Because, you know, at some point, you're going to earn it.
Yeah.
If you believe something like that.
True.
But,
creepy.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that'll be the question of the week for this week. What is the creepiest video game you've ever played? Paul, what was the creepiest video game you ever played? And by the way, it doesn't have to be one that's intentionally trying to scare you. It can just be something that's just creepy.
Oh my god, Five Nights at Freddy's scared the crap out of me.
Oh,
you don't understand. No, you don't understand. I was sitting playing in the living room at my friend's house, and my friend and another friend are like talking like while I'm playing this video game, and I'm not even paying attention to them. Like, I have my headphones on so I can listen to the...
Well, that's your biggest mistake right now.
I don't even really understand anything about the game yet, like, because this is before, like, I was very hard in this case.
Oh, okay, so they were pranking you, weren't they?
Yeah, so nobody knew, right?
Nobody knew? I mean, did your friends know?
No, nobody knew what this game was about. It wasn't even in the top 500 yet.
Oh, okay.
You're
a hipster.
Happened to come across it because I thought it had something to do with Freddy Krueger, but I was wrong.
No, but it does have jump scares, and that's all the game is really jump scares.
Right, but I mean, So I'm sitting there on the couch. They're having a conversation. I'm quiet as can be. The cat's napping in my lap. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I scream. The cat goes, like, climbing onto people's faces. fall off the couch.
Wait, when was this, by the way? When, time-wise, when was this?
A year ago? More? I have no idea. But
okay,
like,
because here's the thing is that I remember people started putting up videos of people, you know those videos in which they shoot someone playing a game, you know, to get their reactions. I think you were playing before they started posting those videos of people
playing. I was
playing
before they started posting those videos because nobody in the room knew what the hell was going on when I mentioned that was the name of the game.
So did your friends watch you play after that?
No, they banned me from playing it because I told them this is such an upheaval. I don't think I've ever gotten past the second day. I've been banned.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care about jump scare games because the best jump scare game I ever played was an old game from 1987 called Rescue on Fractalus, which I could not play with the lights off. I had to have the lights on because that game freaked the hell out of me. Even then, with its jagged, you know, and its 1987 graphics, it was still, yeah. How about you, Scott? What was the creepiest game that you ever played?
Probably tied between Seventh Guest and Doom. Because, those monsters always make me jump see them. And
the creepiest part, the creepiest part is, I don't know which monster has it, but they have sort of a clop-clop, horse hoof type of sound.
Yeah, that's probably I can't remember the name of it either. It's a big bull.
Those demons.
And,
the demons with the horns. Yeah.
It's like a bull demon. I think it's a straight up bull demon. And then there was Seventh Guest, which really had a great atmosphere, creepy story, music, and stuff, and it was great. But,
An honorable mention goes to Myst. When, after spending like 9 years trying to play this freaking game, because it was like right before you could look things up on the internet, getting to the end of it and realizing that it doesn't matter which brother you try to save, you're gonna have a bad ending either way and feel horrified.
Spoilers! I haven't played Myst.
So you didn't get the good ending?
There is no good ending.
There is a good ending. You don't give it to the brothers. Give it to the father.
Dun dun dun.
It was never an option.
Paul's gonna have to start. He's gonna have to play it. Paul's gonna have to play that again just to see it, or go to YouTube.
You
have to unlock the secret little room, and you can find his book, and you open it, and you give him the page, and then he comes out, and he burns both of the brothers' books.
Wow.
And he says
there were some bad design issues going on there because.
Well, it's a hidden ending, Paul.
You can even look that up on the internet.
It's a hidden ending, Paul. You're not, some things are just secrets.
The good ending should not be the hidden ending.
Well, the good ending for me in Silent Hill 2 is where the dog ending, and that's a hidden ending.
It wasn't that hidden. There were white pages. You have to find the white pages, and you bring those to the book. Okay. And you free the father.
So
I was like 9.
So, with me, now I don't normally say scary video games are the ones that creep me out, but I will say that the one game I dreaded playing, well, not dreaded, but, was on edge every second of the time I was playing was Fear, which was the Monolith game about Alma, that scary little kid. Yeah, I mean, they knew exactly how to put you on edge. Great game design in that... The scariest thing that can happen to you in a video game or watching a movie is a sense of helplessness. And even though you're a big bad soldier and you have a gun, the game made you feel helpless at times. And that was when the game was really scary because you had no control over what was going – no real control. I mean, you had control, but you didn't feel like you had control. So there's a – Paul right there can just say, that's because gameplay, story is gameplay's bitch. And right there, gameplay helped the story. So anyways, that's the question of the week. What was the creepiest game you ever played? creepiest. Not scariest, but creepiest. The one that made you go, ugh, you know, just made you shiver all over.
That would definitely be someone's guess then.
Well, I mean, if we're going to talk, if we're going to, you know, act like disgust from In-N-Out.
No, I mean, I'm talking about the heebie-jeebies, Paul, you know.
Right, if we're going to act like disgust from In-N-Out,
okay,
then that's a completely different answer.
I'm just saying, what game give you the heebie-jeebies, really? Or creepiest? I mean, here's the thing. Five Nights at Freddy's is creepy in that you have animatronic creatures attacking you. I mean, that's creepy on itself. And they're just, you know, the way they just keep on advancing on you, you know, when you're not looking, that is creepy, you know, aside from the jump scares. Just, you know, it's like you have to keep your eye on every on the doors and all that stuff. But you're
yeah,
about...
I would add that the first level of the original Bioshock, there's
yeah.
this one scripted event in it where you see someone's shadow, like, murdering somebody.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
and then the doors in the morgue close, so it's like you know that the attacker is, like, in the vaults of the morgue, but they open on both sides, so you just know they're going to come around back behind you. It's a sense of disgust and dread.
There's also that moment in Bioshock, and it's an early moment as well, in which this woman is crying over a baby carriage, and after you deal with her, she's been crying over a gun in her baby carriage, you know?
Yeah, I remember that moment. I wasn't really affected by it.
Yeah, I also... Well, there are plenty of creepy moments in Batman Arkham Asylum, too, the first one. You know,
I only played the second.
No, the first one had the best Scarecrow levels. You have to play the first one, Paul.
Well, if you want to buy me a copy, I'll happily review it for you.
Oh, okay.
I'll feed you, thank you.
I think I still have a spare code. Because, you know, I got the Humble Bundle, all the Batmans. Yeah, it's like $5 now, so it depends on what platform you want it on. I guess
the
PC.
Oh, the Wii U, so it'll be $2.99.
I don't think they released it on Wii U. I think they just...
Well, then what's the point of having one?
PC. You should have the requirements for it. So, anyways...
I'll buy my XP out of my cold, dead hands.
Well, no, it can play on XP.
I'm just saying.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
It's compatible. You'll be able to play it on your PC. So, anyways, we're going to move on to game news. We also have, by the way, a missive from Dan... Dan
a missive from Dan.
Yeah, and I'm going to play it a little bit later in the podcast, and it's about the 400th episode. But in the meantime, Paul, why don't you take the first news item?
Creator of My Little Pony: Friendship is Magic is crowdfunding a fighting game, and this comes to us from VG247. Paul is already skeptical. Them's Fightin' Herds, a fighting game where various four-legged animals lay the smackdown on each other, is asking for $436,000 on Indiegogo. The game, which you can find in the notes, has already raised 19% of its target in the first 11 hours of a 30-day campaign.
Hello.
You'll need to put down $15 or more to secure a copy for yourself. Many of the higher tiers were already sold out as of this writing. Some of this popularity can be attributed to the fact that the game is set in a world designed by Lauren Faust, the creator of both My Little Pony: Friendship is Magic and Super Best Friends Forever. The game was originally going to be based on the My Little Ponies franchise and was named Fighting is Magic until the developers, Main Six, received a cease and desist letter from Hasbro. The game's funding page promises a solidly complex fighting system, as well as a visual lobby where players will be able to hang out with other players from around the world.
Yeah, I don't blame Hasbro for doing a cease and desist.
That's
okay,
wrong.
Let's start at the beginning. I've seen this game. It is a piece of. It was started off as a piece of fan art. As a love of My Little Pony,
it was
Brony Project, and I have absolutely no belief that Lauren Faust is connected with this in any way.
Well, she says she is, so
I mean, maybe they might have
gotten her attention, and she might have liked the concept. You know,
I don't like this concept. I've not even really watched the show, but this seems like exactly the opposite of what Joe's about, you know? It's like the whole friendship, you know, just
yeah, I mean, actually, they do have contests, if I remember right, Paul. I mean, it's not... I don't think the game is going to be, like, violent fighting.
No, you know, the game is just a Mortal Kombat clone.
Yeah, but it's not going to happen.
And their moves are things like Pinkie Pie shoots her party cannon off at you.
Yeah.
Rainbow Dash attacks you with her rainbow blasting thing.
Well, it's going to be something different now since they can't. They don't
well,
have
no,
a license.
I'm just saying, it was all that kind of nonsense. So it's just a fighting game. Mash the buttons as fast as you can.
Yeah.
You know what they should have
really,
though?
With no depth.
They should
and
have.
It itself is even a reference to the show.
Right, you know, they should have a My Little Pony MMO, because thinking of the virtual lobby, can you imagine people with their own designed ponies or unicorns or Pegasi?
That probably would work better, yes.
And even
well,
if
the
they're
Birdies
just...
have done that already, too.
An MMO?
Yeah, a 3D MMO.
Oh, it's probably in Second Life, yeah.
No, it's, I think it's called Equestrian Knights or something.
Okay.
And it's and the servers are only up like one weekend a quarter, if that.
Wow. Well, that actually adds to the loyalty, since if you're only going to be able to play it, you know, in a small period of time with it every 3 months, yeah, that might, you know, that might engender people that we have to go on now because it's not going to be available for another 3 months.
I'm not even sure that it is every 3 months. It might be less than that.
There is a Second Life My Little Pony thing going on. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there.
But the reason why I'm saying that a full-fledged MMO, you know, is that the ponies are so modular, you know. All you have to do is have different colors, either they have wings or horns or whatever, you know, and what color they are and what patterns their spots are. Or
right,
whatever patterns they had on it.
I'm thinking about it from an art production standpoint.
I know. I mean, but it's easy to go from there. And, you know, I mean, it could even just be like The Sims Online, in which it's all interaction. You know, it's all people living in this world and having their own stories, like a Second Life, except, you know, a little bit more involved and just exploring.
You're thinking of that one terrible episode from the last season, aren't you?
No, I haven't had a chance to watch any of the episodes yet, Paul. I'm sorry, but, you know, finally...
You promised me it's a going-away present, you lying jerk.
That was before I lost my job, Paul.
Well, then you had more time!
You know, looking for work is a full-time job. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
It was like 6 hours at most.
Fine, you know what? I'll watch it tonight, okay? I'll have a marathon.
Well, now
I'll wake up at 5 a.m. bleary-eyed, thinking of Pinkie Pie and Applejack and Princess Peach or whatever, you know, and I'll be glazed with ponies in my brain.
Good. Exactly. Because you know what? Because maybe, Jonah, if you understood the magic that is friendship, you'd have more friends.
I have friends. I just need friends who can get me a job. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm never going to be a brony, but I can appreciate, you know, and it seems like something I would enjoy a lot more than, say, Transformers or He-Man or, you know, stuff from our time because,
don't
you
even
know,
joke.
I forgot, you're a He-Man fan.
Don't even joke.
Okay. You're going to have to explain the joke then, because I'm not quite sure where you're coming from, Paul.
No, you're saying don't make fun of He-Man.
Okay, you like He-Man, right? Okay.
Because He-Man is awesome, and I just was at the Egyptian Theater this past weekend.
Ooh.
At what passes for a mini-con these days, since PowerCon is taking a year off.
Oh. So.
And it was awesome!
I'm just, you know, the thing is that, for me, I don't know. I mean, I preferred Disney's, you know, Disney's afternoon lineup than I did, say, He-Man and G.I. Joe and stuff like that, simply because... The art was clever, and it was a little more knowing, you know.
Jonah, it's not a zero-sum proposal. I mean, I loved both.
See, the thing is that...
I actually just recently purchased the Disney Afternoon soundtrack off of iTunes, which they released in commemoration of the 25th anniversary.
I wonder if you listen to theme to DuckTales once too often, you actually go mad.
I don't think anyone's actually hit that point yet, though, is the problem. And it was the most prolific of all of those series, coming in at, like,
over 100 episodes. I think it was like 110 or something I read.
Yeah. I still prefer Tailspin, so we'll leave it at that.
Oh my god, Tailspin is awesome!
Yeah. I liked Darkwing Duck.
Yeah, I mean, I never really got into Darkwing Duck. I understood what the joke was, that he's a complete moron who's a superhero.
No.
Right, I'm sorry, he's a complete selfish guy. No. I'm sorry, he's selfish. He's complete egotist.
Have you watched any of these programs, Jonah?
Anyway, he was...
I don't think I consider him selfish. He was doing everything for his
daughter.
He was
egotistical, anyway.
Big ego, that's whatever. That doesn't make him a bad person.
Well, at least it wasn't that Who Framed Roger Rabbit ripoff. I forgot the
name. Everybody knows that the best Disney afternoon show was the Gummy Bears.
Gummy Bears, bouncing here and there and everywhere.
When Michael Eisner came on in 1983, he told the studio, we're going to have a cartoon on television every afternoon within 6 months. Make it happen. And they did. And it was awesome.
You know what show I watched? Not because I really wanted to or I was cared about it, but it was Saturday morning and I just watched it because it was there, was that Ewoks cartoon. And it was just so... It was like drugs for teens, even. It was just so bizarre.
I never saw droids. Every franchise has its, black sheep.
Yeah. Well, I did watch Dungeons & Dragons religiously, though.
Oh my god, that was an awesome cartoon!
Yeah, although I know, I don't know, Scott, if you know that Paul has a special hatred for one of the characters.
Oh, yeah. Don't really I remember, yes, unicorn. Hating the unicorn, I think.
Yeah, uni.
Yeah.
I don't care for it. Such wasted opportunities.
You see, I could have tolerated uni if he didn't have such an annoying voice. Because the episode which focused on the unicorns, not just uni, but, friends and family.
The unicorns were getting captured for their teleportation magic.
Right. I mean, that was a good episode. It's just that uni just made me want to slap him in the face and say, get puberty at least. Have your voice lower or something.
Well, she was supposed to be a baby is the problem.
Yeah.
That's why she was hanging out with them.
Yeah. And put her in a daycare while the others do dangerous stuff. And don't endanger the baby unicorn. And the thing is that if it wasn't Bobby getting in trouble, it was the unicorn that was getting in trouble.
Well, that was the thing, though, right? I mean, it was the 80s. It was all of this anti-violence in cartoons nonsense. So they took the most violent character class in the game and gave it to the 7-year-old.
Yeah.
And then to make him even less threatening, they made him take care of a baby unicorn.
Yeah. Anyway, and the funny thing is that they were hedging towards, but didn't quite make it to the Scooby-Doo characters. They had the template, but fortunately the personalities weren't like that, And they were sort of like... Because if you probably noticed that there was a Scooby-Doo / Josie and the Pussycats compilation, of the characters, but they didn't have the same personalities as those counterparts, the Shaggy Scooby. Oh, damn it. What was Veronica's brother's name? Reginald? No, that's Reggie. Reggie and the cat, and all that stuff. They were scaredy cats and all that. At least Bobby was the opposite,
Yes, but you might be starting to bridge into a topic of conversation that's more akin to stereotypes and tropes and just hackneyed.
I'm not gonna say it's hackneyed. I'm just gonna say it's formula, and they broke the formula a little bit. So yeah, even Eric, even though he's supposed to be a complete and utter prick, he actually does care,
Well, he wasn't supposed to be a prick. He was just supposed to be more affluent financially than the rest of them, and which gave him a different perspective.
Yeah, but he was also the most likely to be, and he actually, everybody matched their class, and Eric indeed was cavalier, He was
his item was only a shield. I don't think he even had a sword, just a shield.
Yeah. He protected people, though.
I really think that when it comes to the D&D cartoon, they were all deliberately cast against type, and I think they were trying to say something about the game in that sense. The strong one is a little kid, and the ranger who usually would in the game be stereotypical
loner.
Being a loner, right?
Yeah. He's the leader.
And the Cavalier one is afraid.
Right. Well, he's also Cavalier.
Well, no, I mean but he's in the shield. He's the protector, right? And the sneaky thief, I mean, she's kind of clumsy and, you know, more concerned.
She was so modeled on Sue Storm, you know, it's not even funny.
Oh, that's what I mean. Like, she's a thief, but she has absolutely no concern for, like, financial things.
She's also, she's also the heart of the group, you know. She's the one who's always saying, we have to do this because.
Right, and so I really think that they were trying to say something about, you know, about the mechanics of the game and the existence of the Magic Circle, which, I mean, is a game design theory, and if you look it up, you're just like, no, it's a safe space for you to be something that you are not in the real world.
Yeah.
So, just like it's okay to, like, murder people in Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, and Diana was the acrobat, and she had the bow staff, I think?
Yeah.
She had the Chitara-like staff.
Oh, yeah, and the moron was Presto, who was completely incompetent with doing magic. If something good came out of his hat, it was a miracle. Because every time it would just... Actually, that's not true. The things that come out of the hat would be helpful, but in the most roundabout way, it was like... it was the most roundabout, most convoluted way to be helpful, but at least it was helpful. And he also suffered from low self-confidence... Which, you know, as a wizard, you shouldn't. You should have all the confidence in the world. He had no self-confidence.
Right. But again, it's going back to that playing against type situation that was going on there.
Right. And, you know...
Yeah, Baldur's Gate had an Easter egg about that show. They had little portraits in one of the stores in the beginning of the game. And you could see the characters on the wall. And then the text would say... There was legends about a group of young kids that went to fight Tiamat and were never heard of again.
And one of them was Willie Ames.
Yeah.
Sad, really. The other was Adam Rich, too. Straight from Eight Is Enough. Was it Adam Rich and Eight Is Enough?
There actually was a final episode for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Which ended on a cliffhanger. The kids redeemed
about to go
Venger.
Home. Yeah.
Yeah, the kids redeemed Venger and... Dungeon Master thanks them and says this is the secret reason why he brought them to the realm in the first place was to redeem his son, the bad guy, and gives them the option to go home, and it closes out with a portal back to the amusement park standing right in front of them, and it just kind of zooms out, and we don't know whether or not they make the decision to go home in case the show was fantastically popular and picked up for another season.
You know, just reminds me of Captain N, the Game Master, and that, don't you think people might miss them? You know, I wonder what their parents think. They're not all orphans, are they?
No, time flows differently in the home universe, always.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Well, that's not the case with Captain N. Captain N, time ran at the same speed of time, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah, but people would come from the human world time. His entire they went all of the N team went to go visit his high school.
Hmm.
And then they ended up pulling everybody into the video game world for what was it? TNC Surf Design, I want to say? California Games? California Games.
Hmm. So, you know, this will be very brief, but I'm pretty sure the episode, well, I'm not going to assume. The episode I remember the most is when Eric was given the powers of Dungeon Master.
Oh yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, which is the one that you remember most?
Well, having the entire collection on DVD right here, touching it now.
But you don't have to say the name of the episode.
a fan favorite is The Girl Who Dreamed Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. That was Terry, right?
So
could dream the future.
Right, so, but she ends up, like, in their world, and then she gets sent back without them, and it's kind of like her psychic powers let her tell everyone that the group is okay, and to, like, keep believing that they're still alive.
Oh my god, I just realized something. The show ran from 83 to 85. That 13, I mean, it's like... Wow. By the way, that episode which you're talking about when they have the chance to go home, it was unproduced. So you have that DVD. I don't know.
It was never produced. It was a while back when I was in undergrad.
Okay.
There was actually like a fan movement to like do the animation as a fan tribute.
As a radio play.
Get the voice actors to come back and do and like produce it as a.
As a radio play.
As a tribute piece. Not make money off of it, but just like a series completion piece.
Okay. But they and, on your DVD, you should have it as a radio play.
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyways.
Let's be honest, I have a bootleg.
How about you, Scott?
I can barely remember the show, so I obviously need to rewatch it, I think.
Yeah, the one other episode that I remember really well is when Tiamat shows up.
Yeah.
And I think she and Venger fight. Did they fight, Paul? That episode with Tiamat, they fought each other, right?
Yeah, she shows up a few times.
No, the last time, I think the last time was, was the most violent. As a matter of fact, according to this, I don't know. Yeah, but I just remember that whenever Tiamat showed up, it was like, oh, Venger's in trouble.
Yeah, but it was also like, Venger can't win because Hand of God.
And also, Tiamat is a god.
Well, that's kind of what I'm pointing out.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Take it away, Scott.
Okay. Let's see. Xbox Head discusses why Final Fantasy XIV is not on Xbox One from IGN, because you don't own the license. Anyways.
That's not true.
Sorry. Square Enix Reborn MMO Final Fantasy XIV has been available on PlayStation 4 for some time now, but no announcement has been made regarding whether or not it will eventually come to the Xbox One. Unfortunately, it does not appear the game will be headed to the Microsoft platform anytime soon. Speaking with IGN Xbox head Phil Spencer explained, this is due to business and platform exclusivity. Really?
I can give you an explanation for that, what they're really saying.
I'm not surprised at that statement. Hold on. It's business, he said, adding he couldn't speak too candidly about the matter. As I've grown, anyways, in this role, and I've tried to learn the third-party exclusivity thing, and you see us doing less of it now, I found it's not something I'm a huge fan of. I've been used to that since the 80s with Sega and Nintendo. Spencer cites that he likes to bring different aspects of the game to Xbox One instead of a deal with third-party exclusive titles, like he did with Skyrim, citing the Fallout 4 mods coming to the platform and how Microsoft worked with EA to get EA access. He notes a different situation with Rise of Tomb Raider. However, since Microsoft is playing an active role in the development and publishing. But in case of third parties, Spencer claims business deals change things and create platform-specific exclusives, which I hate. Different kind of deals happen, and I know that part of this business, and maybe it'll be my failing in the end, he says, laughing. But it's not something I specifically embrace with any deal that's out there. Whether it's something else, it's just not something I can explicitly talk to.
Okay. So here's the thing.
NDA.
So, you know, that Final Fantasy 15 is coming to the Xbox One as well.
Woohoo!
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
anyway.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
Okay. So here's the thing. What I suspect happened was that Square went to Sony and said, do you want to pay us money so we can help finish this? And we'll give you exclusive stuff. And then they probably went to Microsoft and said, hey, can you pay us money and you can get some exclusive stuff? So Microsoft is not going to give money to something that Sony's giving money to at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
In the case of, say, the Rise of the Tomb Raider, only Microsoft's giving them money, you know? Sony's not involved, so they can do that. It's just that they don't want Microsoft and Sony spending for the same product, mm-hmm. you know? And you get different exclusive stuff. And it's really BS that they said, well, you know, you can't have cross-platform play with PS4 and Xbox One and PC because it's technically impossible. No, that is complete and utter bullshit. You can have it because we've seen PC and PS4 working together, which is with Final Fantasy XIV, and we've seen PC and Xbox 360, not even Xbox One, working together, which was Shadowrun, right? So, yeah, it's not impossible. It's just something they don't want to do. They don't They don't want to dilute. They don't want to spend money on something that other people are spending money for. If they're going to be spending money on a project, they want to be the only one spending money on a project. So they don't want to share. And that's the problem.
Well, because you want to buy something that's going to put your company ahead, right?
Yeah.
Honestly, I feel like this is going to be a little segue. That attitude is probably one of the reasons why I don't like the consoles and the whole thing. You know,
I don't like the consoles.
I feel like they don't like me, honestly, or they don't want me as a customer. They really don't. And this is,
I feel like they refuse to give me a good value for my dollar.
Exactly.
Hmm. By the way, you know that the Microsoft Windows 10 beta is going on right now. I'm addressing this to Scott, who plays Minecraft. I was just wondering if you were...
I have not upgraded to Windows 10, and okay. I don't believe I will be. I'm going to be like Paul, and I will grip on to Windows 7 with every ounce of strength I have, because I don't like what's going on with Windows 10.
I do. I finally come around on it. Now that I know what the problem was, some software you have to reinstall, which makes sense if you're on a new operating system.
Yeah.
Nope. It's a horrible spy machine, and all it wants to do is take all of our data and spy on us for Big Brother.
I don't care.
Nope. They will pry my XP out of my cold dead hands.
Yeah. So, anyways, what's interesting is that Microsoft owns Minecraft now, and they're not being assholes. They're still producing the PS3, PS4 versions, as well as the Mac versions, because they understand that Minecraft has a huge, huge, huge audience, and you don't want to lose any of that audience.
Money, so, yeah. Happy.
So they're telling Mojang to go do what they want to do, and the positive thing with Microsoft and Minecraft is that Minecraft is getting the money that they can do stuff like Tales, the Minecraft Tales thing. You know, with Telltale Games.
Oh, is that like DuckTales?
It might be, if they have ducks.
I don't think there are ducks in the game.
Oh, well, there are chickens and you can kill them. But you have to be careful because they'll attack you and kill you if you don't do it right.
You're thinking of Zelda.
No, I'm thinking... No, I saw videos of this. Or was it pigs that killed people? I know that the birds did revolt and kill someone in Minecraft. I saw it.
The memory's always the first thing to go, Jonah. It's okay.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. Go ahead and look on YouTube.
It was a mod. They don't do that.
The chickens attacked.
No, they don't. That was a mod.
It was hilarious, though. It was hilarious having all these chickens just coming up and attacking somebody for attacking them first. Imagine if that happened in real life. KFC would be a bloodbath. So, anyway. So, now, the next item is coming up, and Paul's probably going to put on his bullshit detector right now.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear him putting it on.
That's why I said that was a segue. Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
No, it's mine. Pactor. I'm reading this one. Pactor, the console installed base is as big as it's ever going to get, and this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. The console business has hit a wall in terms of sales in this generation, and that's okay. According to Wedbush analyst Michael Pactor, the subsequent shift away from the traditional console model will be a catalyst for even more growth. Speaking at DICE Europe last week, Pactor discussed a provocative and divisive topic, the end of the console era. Quote, the console installed base is as big as it's ever going to get, he said. This generation is not going to get bigger than the last generation. We're going to be about the same. The Wii U is going to sell about 20 million units compared to the 100 million for the Wii. The PlayStation 4 is going to sell 120 million or 130 million. That's great. The Xbox One will sell 100 million to 110 million. That's great. Add all together and it's 26 million units, and maybe the last cycle was 27 million, which is odd because apparently, if the Wii is gonna if the Wii outsold the Wii U by 80 million, that if you use math, that's like 90 million less consoles in this generation if you don't include the Wii. Console games shouldn't require a console, and I'm not talking about the cloud. This take on the trajectory of the PS4 Xbox One generation must be assessed in the context of a world that contains far more people who play games than at any other time in history, thanks in part to the impact of the Wii and in larger part to the rapid emergence of smartphones and the app economy. If Pachter's analysis proves to be accurate, it would be suggest that consoles are a limiting factor on the growth potential of the games industry, putting some of the medium's best and most alluring products beyond the reach of the vast majority of people. So I can see where he's going with this, but Paul, why don't you respond first?
I call bullshit.
See, I told you, he was putting on his bullshit detector.
I second that motion.
And it's, you know what, it's, look, it's the same thing has happened in the comics industry, right?
Mm.
In the late 90s, Superman died, and a whole bunch of people
early 90s.
Who had no business sticking their nose in it tried to... You know, try to make
you're talking about predictions. You're talking about the investor boom. The
and
investor boom.
Nothing about it to start with.
Yeah, you know, if you ever watch Atop the Fourth World, Lin Kara talked about how the reason why Action Comics number one was because comics were not, you know, were rare in the 30s, and
right.
they were,
and,
you know,
and
it was
and
Superman.
And in the 40s, like paper and metal were all taken back from the populace to support the war effort.
And then he said, if you make 1 million copies of Blood Gun number one, it's not going to be worth anything in the future.
Absolutely. You know? That's why a rookie card is valuable, right? So it just really sounds like the projections of someone who is not an insider. I mean, you have companies like Nintendo and Microsoft and Sony who are all fantastically powerful corporations.
Okay, but
that are hammering away at laws that have been preventing the growth of the market in foreign territories.
Hmm.
So, I mean, specifically China and India.
Well, that's going to be coming next. So let's not jump ahead there, Paul. That's going to be the next item, Paul. So let's not jump ahead.
My point is that this sounds like the opinion of an unlearned person.
Well, the problem with consoles, though, is that you're stuck with a certain hardware configuration for a couple of years, right?
Not if it's modular.
That's true. They could do that.
Yeah, but they're not going to do that because the main appeal of consoles is that the game you bought today is going to work on the the game that you buy 5 years from now is going to be working on the console you bought today. You know, it's always that single. It's always going to be that
not
single.
Not if you buy a new generation one.
That's not what I'm talking about.
No.
So, I'm talking about within the same generation. Five years from now, if I buy an Xbox One game, I'll still be able to use it on my launch Xbox.
Well, but no, but we've seen this before, right? With altering hardware. We've seen a crash not as popular.
Yeah, I mean, we know about the Sony PlayStation, but that's when they changed their console to the PS1 Slim
that is not what I was going to say. Cut me off when you don't know what I'm going to say. As I was saying, we've not seen it perhaps as popular in this country, but in Japan, most certainly, where we've had the Sega CD, the Super Nintendo Wi-Fi downloader. So we've the N64 graphics engine expansion pack. So we've seen it before that you can update the hardware if you plan for it in advance.
Yeah, but here's the thing is that people are discovering gaming in other formats, and I'm going to talk about smartphones, you know, and iPads, you know, and those, you know, those are new customers, and they prefer having gaming on the go with an iPad or an iPhone or Android phone, you know, because it suits their needs better. It's not growing the console market. It's growing a video game in general market. He's talking about the consoles, the traditional consoles like the Xbox One, the PlayStation 4.
I was just talking about the consoles, and it sounds like you not only cut me off, but then you didn't bother to listen when
I listened. I disagree.
You can't disagree with facts, Jonah. You want me to send you product facts?
I'm talking about sales. What's it called? Facts here.
I think.
You're not making a sales point anymore, Jonah.
Okay, well, let's agree to disagree, Scott.
I think that this person should be doing research into how to expand the growth because there are people that you know do hashtag PC masteries because they're sick of the consoles because the consoles don't appeal to them. So there's probably several million right there. That if they would do the research to how to find out how to get those people back onto the console instead of doing, you know, oh, I'm sticking to the PC only, then maybe they could expand their market more. And it's, you know, that's, Paul did have a good point about other markets that you could expand this console into, but they, it sounds like they just don't want to bother. It's like, oh, oh, we got everyone. That's the first-person shooters, the sports guys, and yeah, we don't care about the adventure gamers.
Paul?
No, I completely agree, Scott.
Okay. The problem with PCs is that they're very expensive. Once, but here's the thing. Once we see PC components start to go down in price again, and it's cyclical, you know. I mean, sometimes
really slow down the price.
Well, then they go back up in price, because when I was shopping for a new PC, you know, some of them were, you know, for my gaming needs, you know, the, it was too expensive, because I don't buy, you know, PCs. I buy gaming PCs, which means I have to have the best, or at least a very, very good, what's called graphic card, which is going to cost $500, and, you know, that sort of stuff. So,
right. And to your point, Jonah, it's a very different thing to purchase a family, you know, a home family living room computer as it is to purchase a gaming rig, to the order of like $2,000 or $3,000 in difference, because you have to have the best stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, I guess, well, the thing is that Power PC gaming is like a boutique thing. You know, it's like buying a Rolls instead of a Fiat or something like that. So yeah, I mean, and it remains to be seen. I mean, you know, I just find myself playing. I don't know. Maybe it's because the games I want haven't been released yet. But I've been playing basically downloadable games mostly on my Xbox One lately. You know, like my baseball game and some other stuff. And I just on my backwards compatibility, they released Shadow Complex, and I'm going to see if I can't complete that game. So yeah, it's interesting. But the next item is actually related to what we've been talking about. Go ahead. I think it's Paul this time.
It probably is.
Yeah. Andrew House.
Andrew House says that the PS4 is struggling against censorship in China. And this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Sony Computer Entertainment CEO Andrew House has admitted that sales of the PS4 have been slower than expected in China thus far, putting some of the disappointment down to an ongoing battle with Chinese censorship over what titles can be published. Quote, "We are still challenged somewhat with a censorship regime that we will have to work with. This can be time-consuming," House told Reuters. Whilst he accepted that, quote, "I don't think it has been a kind of a rocket launch start." House was also confident that there was, quote, "tremendous potential for gaming as an entertainment medium in China." Chinese content restrictions regulations are still tight, despite a relaxation of the trade embargoes, which have allowed both Sony and Microsoft to sell consoles in the territory since March. Even though the hardware is now available, few are tempted to buy it when the available catalog of games is still limited by strict rules on the portrayal of violence and negative representations of China. With big-name titles like Killzone Shadowfall, Call of Duty, Battlefield, Grand Theft Auto, and Bloodborne banned from sale, that's right, banned completely, some Chinese gamers are importing region-unlocked versions from Hong Kong, which no such restrictions apply. But many more are simply not investing in the console to begin with. Nonetheless, House is confident of achieving the forecasted 16.5 million unit sales this year, believing that burgeoning sales elsewhere will compensate.
I don't...
Elsewhere?
Yeah.
Alpha Centauri, maybe?
I think, yeah. What I think he's implying is that sales of the PlayStation 4 have been better than expected, but no, I don't think you're just going to pull a couple million units out of nowhere.
I mean,
this is worse than Australia.
They're saying that, like, they're selling more consoles domestically.
Well, in Europe, maybe, you know.
In Europe, possibly. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, well, the PlayStation is very big in Europe. That's always been where their biggest base has been, you know, aside from Japan, has been Europe. But anyway.
If they slash their prices, they'd sell more consoles.
Yeah, we haven't heard. I wonder if Microsoft's having the same problems, because Microsoft a couple of years ago started training Chinese developers. So it could be. So here's the answer to their problem. If the Chinese government is going to be restricting on content due to political issues, then just train Chinese developers to work for your console in that country. You know,
absolutely.
So, you know, that way, you know, you satisfy everybody. The main problem with China is that they're very PC-centric, and they'd rather just buy pirated games than buy a console. You know?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they are much less technology-phobic than many people here in the U.S.
I don't know if it's technology-phobic. It's more like it's their way of getting stuff that they can't normally get a lot easier and faster and cheaper. Because, you know, you've heard the tales, you know, if you go to Hong Kong, you can buy any $60 games there for a dollar in a bag.
Well, no, I'm not disputing that. But
yeah.
Maybe technology phobic is the bad word. It's more like...
they're more invested in it.
People don't feel that, like, they, in America, don't feel like they need to understand, like, what's inside their computer. They're just going to go buy the latest i-whatever and not be that concerned. So it's like a... like a deliberate dumbing down of the American consumer.
That feels like how Apple does their computers. Like, don't worry what's on inside the computer. Just buy this and stop working. Buy a new one.
Exactly. Exactly. We're being trained to have disposable holes instead of replaceable parts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that reminds me of why Alan, who's the son of Jordan Lund, who was one of the co-hosts, is taking computer classes because...
He would come back
and say goodbye. Here's the thing is that we discussed this before, and that is every child, you know, being in school right now should be learning how to program and code, because that's the future. Everybody should know code, or at least, you know, a good chunk. If you want to be successful, learn how to do code.
I'm actually enrolled in a C++ class now. Hmm. I'm sorry, no, C#.
He made it into a musical term. I'm a B sharp. He's an he's an E minor.
B sharp specifically so that I can script in Unity.
Yeah, I was very into BASIC when I was growing up.
Oh, and... no, I'm talking about my secret projects.
Yes, Paul's making a clock that people will think is a bomb.
Oh my
God! Did you see how those kids made a technologically driven replica of the Weasley's clock from Harry Potter?
Sweet.
Oh my God, it was amazing. So, like, it just uses their different smartphones and the geolocating along with their schedule, and it just kind of keeps changing the four hands on the clock depending on
you Harry Potter people, you know? You're just from a different dimension, I think.
Hey, the only reason Muggles have technology is to copy all the crap that they can't do with magic.
I'm sorry the child died in you, Jonah. That's really... I'm sorry to hear that.
I didn't read the books because I was an adult when they came out.
Well, they're good books. I'm sorry the child died.
You see, I'm an MST3K guy. What can I say? Anyway, getting back to China. I mean, what were they expecting anyway? They had to know that China was extremely restrictive. I mean, just because they released...
This wasn't going to be a piñata that they just struck gold and, you know, and got a whole bunch of money just because, you know...
Here's the thing. They're seeing the crap ton of money that movies are making in China. The reason why we have all these really, really, really shitty Transformer movies is because everybody in China wants to see it, and they have a billion people, and it's going to make money.
Chinese,
and
Michael Bay.
No, it has to do with the fact that China, they want Transformers movies. I'm not.
I don't know, man. I think if we murder Michael Bay, we might solve a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Anyway. I mean, there's other movies that have nothing to do with Transformers bomb, like Pain and Gain, you know, but Transformers, China, big money. So the reason why I'm saying this is that, you know, people, see that, and they say, hey, video games, they like video games in China. The problem is that A, they prefer their PCs, and B, content restriction, you know? So, yeah. But like I said, they had to understand that just because there's a billion people there doesn't mean you're going to make money off them.
That's true, and it sounds like in a nutshell what you're saying is that they never bothered to deal with the cultural differences.
Yeah, they dealt with the higher ups, the government, but they didn't deal with the people. So anyway, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Analyst, 30 million VR headsets by 2020 from Games Industry Biz. Virtual reality is finally going to crack the mass market, according to Juniper Research. The firm's latest research report predicts that by 2020, the VR industry will have shipped 30 million headsets globally. The recent attention to and investment into virtual reality is helping to revitalize the industry, and with the major brand commercial launches imminent, there is huge potential for rapid market expansion, says Joe Crabtree, one of the report's authors. While VR has come and gone as fad in the past, Juniper expects it to stick around this time, thanks to lower display latency, better graphics, and backing of major players like Facebook, HTC, and Sony, all of whom are prepping VR headset launches in the next year. Juniper cites 2016 as a watershed year for the technology, with shipments of about 3 million headsets around the world. Juniper also expects the price of the headsets to come down dramatically by 2020. 30 million projected headsets retail for $300, expected in the first wave launches. That would put hardware sales through 2020 at $9 billion. However, Juniper is only forecasting retail hardware revenues from headsets to exceed $4 billion within 5 years.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you all see the inherent problems here with
my
that idea.
My immediate reaction is that the peripheral cannot be more than the console.
That's what I was about to say. $300, too expensive. That's why 3D TVs flopped, because no one is going to spend that much money and for each individual, you know, 3D glasses just to see a movie in 3D. You know, no, they're not going to bother. For this to work, the headsets can't be much more than an average controller. You know, The good controllers are $50 to $60. So if they say $70, $75, then I'll believe maybe a VR controller. And then you have to have the software for it. You know, and that might not be as much of a problem, because there are some people who are saying that there are certain games that are amazing with VR. But like, you can't have 300. I mean, maybe on a PC as a boutique thing. But even then, you know, I mean, generally people don't watch. Well, actually, never mind, because they're not going to be watching TV. They're going to be watching the VR. But still, I just don't.
It's such a mess of a situation that I can't believe that these are the numbers that they want to stick with.
Yeah, they're counting their chickens before the eggs hatch.
Absolutely. I think the closest thing that they could even think to get anywhere near these numbers are like cardboard iPhone holders that do stereo-opticon vision.
Oh, I remember that. That was hilarious.
They're still selling those. They're still selling those.
I can't believe they're selling them. Oh, my gosh.
I want to do it. I'll order them and just, you know, it's gay. It's cool.
I
got some wooden nickels for you, too.
Come on.
I mean, I've experienced them at...
And they work.
Yeah, at E3, at the, you know, and the other times that I've run into the Oculus booth. But it's like, that's the level of monetary investment that it has to get down to, because it's going to continue to be a boutique kind of item. Because let me tell you, most 40-year-old women, 50-year-old women, perhaps, are not going to put that as a priority for their entertainment dollar when they have to strap a thing to their head and keep them distracted from other concerns in their life. You know,
the way you said they're going to strap it in, you know, I was thinking of something else that you strap on.
I don't even
The way you
know.
Said that is just
there.
Hilarious.
Do
now,
you have to discuss all the time?
So here's the thing, is that Sony has just changed the name of their VR headset from Morpheus to a PlayStation VR, and Microsoft has the HoloLens. And did you watch the Microsoft conference, Scott?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so you should have seen. They did the HoloLens demonstration with Minecraft.
Yeah,
and what's it called? It's like, you know, I think Minecraft players might actually enjoy that. You know, just seeing their creations in three dimensions on a table. That's not VR, though. That's not true. That's augmented reality. I mean, I guess we could treat it the same way. So the thing is, I'm wondering, how much is the PlayStation VR going to cost? How much is the HoloLens going to cost? Because we know that the Oculus Rift is going to cost $300. if I remember correctly. So, you know, it's price is everything, you know. This is a consumer. You see, here's the thing. This is not like other electronics in which you do have the boutique items, like the boutique, you know, video cameras which cost $5,000. And then you have the other video cameras which cost $1,000 and some other video cameras that cost $500, right? This is video gaming. People tend to prefer inexpensive stuff, and not the consoles themselves, because people will spend $900 on an iPad Air, and they'll spend maybe $800 now they've went down in price, or you know their smartphone, but they still expect $1, $2, $3 games, you know,
and they have every right to.
I mean, there are some games that are actually $20, which are worth the $20, but it makes it sound like you're spending $300 for a game when it's $20, you know. So can you imagine? You're expecting people, like Paul said, to spend a crap ton of money on something that might cost more than the console they're using it with.
And essentially, this is just a luxury. Unless you can come up with a fantastic variety of software titles to exclusively use this kind of technology from a valuable gameplay perspective, yeah, the whole thing is just going to be, you know, a toy for rich jerks.
In this case, yeah, it's a little easier because basically to do VR, you still have the same game. You just, you know, it's like turning it into a 3D. You know, you're just adding that extra shell over it so that it can do that. But again, you know, like I said, I don't think people will, you know, $100 was too much for Kinect, right? You want it.
Absolutely.
You have to do the sweet spot. You know, $60 to $75. I think is what people expect.
Do you remember the nonsense that they tried to push with the Kinect? Oh, it's like a mini console. Like, no, it's freaking not.
I don't remember them saying that, but I'm pretty sure they might have said that at some point.
It's like, oh, this is like we're like launching a new mini console. It's like, no, you're not. You're trying to sell an add-on.
Well, you know that in the article that I didn't use this week, because it was sort of related to this item, was that Sony was saying that they're treating the PlayStation VR as a new console launch. You know, and
seriously, I'm
saying good luck. Good luck with that.
Nonsense that they tried to force feed us with Kinect, and we all know how well that turned out.
Microsoft is doing the smart thing. They're being more low key about the HoloLens. I mean, they're promoting it, right? But they're not making it sound like, well, you're going to need to have this for the Xbox One or the PC. You know, this is not something that is something that you desperately need. We understand it's a luxury item, and you know, we'll show you the cool things you can do. And if you like it, hey, buy it. If you don't think you can afford it, well, that's fine with us. You know, it's not like Microsoft's riding the next generation with HoloLens like they did with Kinect.
Hey, you know what? Six people still bought the I Am Rich app.
People bought
anybody,
the.
Does anybody not know what that is?
It's a $1 app, isn't it?
No, absolutely not. It was in like the first generation of the App Store. It was one of the very first apps,
right?
And like first 1,000 apps or whatever. And it was called I Am Rich. It retailed for $999.99.
Okay.
And all it did, well, I mean, so that they could split it three ways, right?
Yeah.
And all it did was display a red jewel on your iPhone. This was so that you could basically walk around telling people you have so much money, you can piss away $1,000 on nothing.
Yeah, you know, they
people still bought it.
Here's the thing. There was this thing in Tibet in which there was this coffee house which sold $1,000 coffee, a cup of coffee. And they asked, well, what's different about it? And they said, nothing is different about it. It's just $1,000 cup of coffee. That proves you can afford $1,000 cup of coffee.
Exactly what it is. It's proof that you can piss your money away like that.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, confirmation that you're just that stupid. I mean,
They also had that special edition of Saints Row 3 in which
it sounds like a sign for I'm an asshole. Look at how I spend my money.
Hold on one second.
Like a lady. It sounds like there's a female in one of your recording areas.
Me or Jonah?
I can't tell when it's the two of you.
Okay. So there was a special edition of Saints Row 3, I think it was. In which they only had one copy, and in which you spent something like $2 million on it, and it came with the game, a boat, a Rolls Royce, and all these really high-priced items. So, yeah. And I'm wondering if someone actually bought it. So, yeah, the $1 million... Here it is. The $1 million copy of Saints Row 4 came with a trip to space with Virgin Atlantic.
Oh, come on.
A Lamborghini Gallardo. A one-year membership to E3 Supercar Club. A full day of spy training. A seven nights for two at the Jefferson Hotel in Washington. A shopping spree with a personal shopper. Plastic surgery of the purchaser's choice. Also a new Toyota Prius. A hostage rescue experience. And a seven-night stay at the Top Royal Suite at the Boulevard Arab with flights for two. So, yeah, I mean, now granted, all of that, the $1 million would cover all of that, all of those extras. So I'm wondering, they only had, quote-unquote, one available, and I'm wondering if anybody ever took them up on that offer.
If you're the purchaser of the $1 million copy, and you're a listener of our show... Ask yourself what you're doing with your life. No, I'm kidding.
You came with a car and a Lamborghini and...
Like, what the hell are you doing?
I want to know if the box itself was made of pure gold. No, it wasn't. But there has to be something in the game that indicates that you bought this game. I mean, like your little $1,000 app, you know, at least you got the red gem. You know, there should be something in the game that said, yeah, I spent $1 million on this.
It's like, yeah, I'm that douche.
But then again, you got two cars and a trip to space. At least it was worth it, you know?
I mean, do people actually even do commercials like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as a matter of fact. Or, no, wait, I'm sorry. No, it couldn't have been because that was because Richard Garriott did a flight into space, but that cost him $12 million. I don't understand spelling. You know, you're going to be waitless for a bit. Big deal. You know, wait until it actually comes down in price before you go to space.
Bragging rights, as they could say they did it.
Yeah, but for $13 million? I don't know.
$13 million pissed away, Jonah.
Yeah, but he almost pissed away everything because NCSoft decided at that point while he was in space to try and screw him out of his money for that for the game. We did an entire article about this, how and NCSoft got busted because they were terrible creeps, and he got his money. So he could pay for that flight to space. Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to go to space unless there's a place to go to. Like, there's a hotel on the moon. You know,
yeah,
something
right?
Like that.
It's like, why spend all that money going if there's nothing to do when you get there? It's like, I could drive to the middle of, you know, the Great Salt Flats.
I want to do that because I'm pretty sure the Great Salt Flats would have a great astronomy experience if you have a nice telescope, you know? Because that's something you don't get in New York City, because we have such terrible light
pollution.
Yeah, but
that's like you have to bring your own thing to do.
Yeah, but I'd bring my own telescope. At least there, I'm getting to see stuff, and I don't have to I don't have to be in space to see the stars. I don't know. I mean, hey, you know, it's his money. He wanted to spend it on going into space for what, a 2-hour flight? That's great. Yeah. Anyway,
you know, I think I could do something a little bit more meaningful for $12 million. But hey, why didn't somebody give it to me and prove me wrong?
It's not even meaningful. It's more like I would find something a little more sensible to do. I don't know. I'm not Liberace. I'm not going to spend all my money on, say, a bejeweled Captain Marvel outfit, you know? Anyways. So we're going to go on to listener feedback. And hey, Paul, why don't you read the listener feedback?
From Arthur the Fifth, do it like it's 2013. It's good to see Nintendo finally getting its stuff together, but I still say they missed their chance. They had a large release advantage over Xbox One and PS4, and they wasted it. Now they are now fever crushed to play.
Oh no, they're forever cursed.
Forever cursed. Whoa. Oh my god, I'm so glad I went to the optometrist today. At all your videos are belong to
well,
us.
Well, by the way, for reference, he's referring to signing Kiwashimi? Oh, no, Kahakashi. The new CEO was not someone like... was not Shigeru Miyamoto. It was someone from their branch of board directors, rather than someone famous.
Right. I mean, which is fine. At all your video games are belong to us. I kick this right into the lawyer's ballpark. I remember the days of the Xbox and PS2 when I gave developers money for their game, and that was the end of our interaction. But in the modern game industry, spawns this horrible mutation of gaming, where developers still have a considerable impact on my gaming experience post-release. After Xbox 360, I got used to the continuous updates, but it keeps getting worse. The gaming industry is nurturing its own big brother, which is largely controlled by non-gaming people. No good will come of this. Oh, and God, I love you, Arthur.
Yeah, I think he's referring to the fact that we're getting games that... we're getting DLC as parts of games that should have been there in the first place, basically.
Right, and I mean... it's where does the line start between, you know, monetization and being obtrusive?
Yeah.
At Cell Games, I agree with Jonah. Oh, Arthur, we were on such good terms. I agree with Jonah. I was impressed with the Infamous games, but I didn't see any differences between multi-platform titles. Cell was a poor choice for Sony, much like HD DVD was for Xbox 360. I am eager to pick up a PS4 and see what Sony's new hardware is capable of. At Plus One Paul, earliest thing I remember, how long has it been since then? I will miss Paul. He brought a very unique and interesting point of view to the gaming industry. Not least of all, on a departing note, is that it's called the games industry. Gaming usually means like blackjack. I learned a lot about game development from him. I also realized that I never want to be a game developer. Oh, good, then my work here is done. Good luck to you, Paul, and get a proper job. It's time you started pulling your weight in the economy. Mandatory hate mail. Aww.
See, you got your parting hate mail.
I got the party email.
So, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, so leave us a comment on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast and forums at GamingPodcast.net/forums. Send us comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. You can contact me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon, Paul at StageRomonkey, and Scott at AlphaShard. Now, I think it's good time for me to play that thing that... I haven't heard it yet, by the way, so this will be a new experience for all of us.
Hey, TD Gaming Podcasters. Long time no speak. My name is Dan Quick, and I was a regular co-host on the show between April 2012 and January 2013, most recently a guest on episode 357 in July 2014. Congratulations, TDGP, on reaching 400 episodes. Even in cyberspace, it can be a small world. Joan is a 3-time guest on my Civilization Gaming Strategy podcast, Polycast, at thepolycast.net. And current TDGP regular co-host Scott Dirk is Polycast's most frequent guest with 12 appearances to date. Jordan Lund, another past regular co-host here on the TD Gaming podcast, provides the voiceovers for my Dramedy series podcast, One More Turn, which Scott and I are voice performers on over at onemoreturn.net. Now, as longtime listeners to the TD Gaming Podcast know, Jonah is very particular, in fact, very protective about one part of the show, the closing. After more than 200 episodes as a TD Gaming Podcast regular, he needs to take a break from it, if however brief. So, here we go. Look for show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and gaming history articles. If feedback is enjoyed, so leave blog comments at GamingPodcast.net, Facebook.com/GamingPodcast, and forums at GamingPodcast.net/forums. Or send your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. You can also check out Twitter handles at Jonah Falcon for Jonah, at StagerMonkey for Paul, and at AlphaShard for Scott. Game on!
Aww!
That was cool.
You know what? I'm going to have to edit out my version of it just so that he could have the... See, had I heard that, I wouldn't have done it. But now I have to leave it in. So yeah, at least, you know, he did the honorable thing and promoted the other podcast that Scott is involved in. So anyways, that was one of the hosts, one of the former hosts, and I'm going to get some more audio from other hosts, but you know, it's not going to be while we're recording, so you'll have to hear the episode after it's done to hear it.
Life it in later.
Yeah, so...
But then how will I know who said goodbye to me?
Arthur V. said goodbye to you.
Yes, I have one friend.
That's not true. You know what, everybody, just... Why don't you just write in? And the two things is, one, say goodbye to Paul, especially you silent people who've been listening for a long time and have occasionally posted. But I guess we all have busy lives, but you could actually take one moment to actually go to gamingpodcast.net and post your little farewell to Paul. And also, the question of the week is, what was the creepiest game you've ever played? And Paul, Scott, and I gave our answers, and we'd like to hear yours as well.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Buy me a present.
What? It's good advice.
It really is. What are you doing telling me to save up all this time?
Well, you know, when you buy those bonds, you know, eventually they mature, and then you can buy Paul presents.
There you go.
Okay.
There yeah. You go. So anyways, most of us will see you next week.